Hello.
Hey everybody, welcome. Glad you're here. For those who have, some of you may have sent me an email. I'm just checking now. Last minute checking. Yeah, JD sent me a question. I'll answer his question. Just a reminder, everybody, feel free to drop in the chat box a Q if you have a question, if you want to chat about anything at all. And if I don't hear from any of you, then I will just start talking at you, which is going to be very annoying. You're not going to like that. So in the meantime, we're going to start with JD. I think if he's here, he may not be here yet, in which case we can start with anybody else. JD is not here yet. Okay, fire away. How's everybody? What's going on?
Hello, this is Reese. Doing well.
Good.
Huge
Awesome.
week.
What happened this week?
Oh, I guess I'm talking. I was gonna say I shouldn't have opened my mouth. No, if you remember from last week, oh, sorry, blessed Ash Wednesday to everybody for those who partake. Last week I had you guided me through decision-making process because I was kind of in quandary, a little confused and where I want to be or where I want to get headed. And then I had a chat with my you guided me to the decision-making manual. I think that's module five, what it was. And so I read on that, and then I kind of got to my decision as a cross hybrid between the crystal ball and the data driven method. And also after a chat with my wife, she my immediate thinking last week when we were talking was I want to really get back to my entrepreneurial roots and get that drive again to whatever drove me before anyways. And then my wife goes, "Well, really, you haven't been an employee, in quote, for very long. We only got the engagement going since last June, and really moving forward, I was pretty much running things on my own, except for a few check-ins between the ownership and I." And so he said, "Remember, in 2020, we was basically I had no income." Because everything shut down, and she goes, and all the stress that was reflecting on me and my family, and she goes, "Well, why don't you just take a breather as an employee for now, and see where it lands? You remember all the stress, you remember all the worries, you remember how you're going to make payroll, cash flow, and all that stuff. That was all on you." And then, and she said, "The last few months, actually, most of the year, last year, half the year, and then up till now." I've seen you as you were before 2020 happened, before all the worries and troubles happened. So, but I did also go through your guidebook, and it's not a big decision because this is not irreversible. But it is a decision still that I will maintain my current status as an employee. In a leadership role, since it's while I'm not a true solo, or I'm not doing this on my own, and I have a supervision of an owner, I do have the perks of being pretty much left alone. So I'm currently, long story short, at the point where I'll maintain this for a while, maybe a year or so. I think it helps me physically, emotionally, and mentally. And that also helps my family because I'm easier to deal with and a lot nicer. And another part of that question from last week was my personal goal. And so I did the technique, and basically one key phrase that you had in there was, "Is it going to harm anyone?" And if if your answer is no, then go do it. So I'm going to do it. It's not going to cost a lot, and it's just for my personal growth, and it's not going to affect anything I do professionally. So answered two questions with your help. So much appreciated.
Awesome. Well, Reese, I don't in any way intend to push back on the decision you've made. And I think you're right. It's a reversible one, so you can always revisit it. The one thing that stood up to me in what you described and that I would caution you in, and I'm in no way trying to go against the guidance of your wife. I think she has lots of wisdom and is important part of that decision making. But the one thing that I noticed is a lot of the input being given to you was connected with issues of fear. And fear has a very, very specific place in making decisions. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have fear or you should banish it completely from your life. Fear can be quite useful as a guide, but we have to make sure that it's in its proper place. And so a lot of what you were being guided to there was outside of yourself. So the thing to remember about the practice is that everyone around you, including me, has agendas for your life. You know, we all want you to want certain things. And it is paramount that we learn to connect to the things that we want, independent of what our kids want us to want, our spouse want us to want, our boss want us to want, our friends want us to want. And so a lot of the exercises that I'm showing you there, it's the kind of thing that it can take time. It can take a series of practices over time before you have refined your ear, the way a musician can listen to whether a string is out of tune. The heart is what's guiding you. And to listen to that heart requires an attuned ear that is not overly governed by fear. And so again, I'm not saying that I think you're afraid, but I sensed in the guidance of your wife, her own fears. And yeah, that may be the right answer, but I would put that in as one of the many data points rather than as the guidance for your decision-making. So just some cautions.
Understood.
Not that I have the right answer here. It's still your answer, but I just want to make sure you have the necessary space to really hear your own voice.
Understood. Thank you. Oh, one more comment, actually. Sorry. I hope I don't take too much time, but delving into module 5 also has that part of find your why.
Yep.
So boy, all the hours I saved before that from your, I dove deep into a wormhole. I'm like, I'm not even out of that yet, but it is a fascinating, fascinating exercise. And I'll find an answer once I keep going back into it. You know, work gets in the way of.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
But it is, the wormhole was like, oh, I go back to module 1. And then from module 1 goes, oh my God, I got jumped over. It's like,
yeah,
it's yeah, awesome, but awesome. It'll happen.
Well, Reese, one last comment, and then I want to welcome Diego. It's his first call. So the other comment I'll just make is, as you live as an employee, bonus 5, which is how to manage up and across, will help you begin to make an adjustment from being a business owner and having the power to make kind of unilateral decisions however you want to working for an owner. There is a different set of practices and communication tactics and tools that could be quite helpful for you. So that would be one recommendation I have. And then there's also a section in the first 90 days success plan, which is bonus 1. Okay. There's a little section in there about how to work with a new boss. And there's probably some, you can just download the guidebook. You don't have to watch the videos and scroll to the section that just talks about the do's and don'ts of working for a new boss. So just a couple of little tactics there around how you navigate the new world as an employee rather than an owner. Sound good?
Perfect. Thank you.
Awesome.
Welcome, Diego.
Oh, hey, Diego. This is your first call, yeah?
It is. It is my first call.
Welcome. Glad to have you. Why don't you give us a brief introduction?
Sure. Awesome. Well, do I begin? My name is Diego Guayan. You know, I usually go by Diego. My last name is kind of hard to say, so just Diego is fine. You know, people call me just Diego. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I've, you know, started companies and worked for other people. Right now, I'm like running my own company and working for another company too at the same time.
Right.
I've been in the financial sector for 20 plus years. I've been in different roles of, you know, leadership. Today, I, in my own company, I run a small team, very virtual. And my day job, I'll call it, I run a team of about 80 people and growing. And I just got here a year ago. And this this company, the company I work right now is Loan Depot. I actually was one of the founding members of the company back in 2009. Booming startup from like 50 people to like 5,000 people in less than 5 years. I left to start my own company. I ran that for 5 years. COVID really didn't help a lot. So I had to kind of make some decisions to keep that company alive and get a day job to, you know, continue the journey on the side. Now I head the product team, the product management team for a pretty large organization, Loan Depot. There are about 10,000 employees right now.
Oh, that's and huge. Yeah.
It's pretty big. So we have a lot of products that we support. And I was given the challenge when I came back to reignite the product organization. It was dismembered and reformed several times. So my charter now is to create a world-class product management organization. And I've been at it for the last 7 months. I've hired about 40 people in the last 3 months.
Wow.
And so we're growing leaps and bounds. I've been getting, I read a bunch of your content and I've, you know, do a lot of leadership reading and so, you know, introspection. So it really helped me get things moving. And I'm really looking forward to learn more and really, what really draw me to this program is really the human factor. And I realized that I'm not in the business of product management anymore. I'm in the business of people management. Then my team is the one really executing the product vision and things like that. And I'm really here to promote the culture, to make sure that the right things are in there, removing blocks for them and really be their advocate. And then that's kind of why I know, going through module, I know you were talking about module one, like my why is really around that. And I know, should I share my why or?
Yeah, of course. We'd love to hear your why.
Yeah, so my why is to inspire my team members and others around me so they can become a better version of themselves.
I love it. That's great. So just so I understand, is your tradecraft in your background, is it software computer related?
Software. So my background, I'm a computer engineer by trade.
Got it.
And I grew up in the, you know, programming. Started like 20 years ago in a small mortgage company as a programmer. From there, I moved around and I started managing teams. And then I've launched a few startups as, you know, their main, you know, CTO and awesome. Other positions as well.
Awesome. Okay, very cool. Really glad to have you. What's your biggest challenge?
I'll say growth, establish a culture of innovation and creativity, and status quo. I think that people's ways are very ingrained, and I need to change their mind. I need to change their mind in a different, you know, have them think in a different way.
Okay. So you have are you familiar with the STARS model of assessing an organization and where they are? Does that acronym mean anything to you?
No, I haven't. I haven't done that model.
Okay. So this is actually detailed in the first 90 days success plan. It's what I teach leaders to do with the first 90 days they come into an organization to figure out effectively how to calibrate change management. So a couple of things that I'm going to suggest for you to be watching and paying attention to, and then, you know, feel free to jump in, ask any other questions that you have on this call, but I'm going to give you some little mini assignments. One assignment for sure, just kind of start making way through module one, which you're already doing, which is great. But I think it's video 12 of module one. is the foundational body of work around which we think about change management. And it's a process called staging the ascent. And the metaphor is how you get up Everest. Now, you might have already seen that. I don't know. Do you already watch that?
Not that one. I'm in like video like 8 or 9 and like doing the values.
Great.
So
great.
I'm pretty close.
Awesome. So when you get to 12, that'll give you a nice foundation around. Okay. Diego's got a bright idea. He knows which way to go and nobody else is on board yet. And how do you get everyone on board? There's a very specific process that you use to get there.
Yeah.
There are caveats to that process that are found in what I call the STARS model, which is in the first 90 days bonus one. And that one, I think it's the video is just called the STARS model. I don't know what the video number, but it's easy to find. And all it does is it helps you do an assessment of where the organization is. And I won't go into all the details right now,
okay.
But the high point are things like, you know, some organizations are in a startup mode, some are in turnaround mode, some are in realignment mode, STA, right? RS. Okay. And so, accelerated growth, realignment, and sustaining growth. Those are the STARS. And the reason that that distinction can be helpful is the way that you lead change in accelerated growth is very different than the way you lead change in realignment. And it's you named both of those as active. And that
yes,
means
they are.
we've got to get strategic about how to play that and lead that change given those two realities. Because here's what's really going on. The dominant emotion of accelerated growth, the dominant underlying resonant emotion that will drive behavior. If you recall my video on the 80% is driven by the emotional system.
Yep.
In accelerated growth, you're dealing with the experience of overwhelm. There's so much we have to do. There's so many new things. There's so much changing. That's overwhelm. The experience of realignment, the fundamental emotion is denial. There's nothing wrong. I don't know what you're talking about. The status quo works great. And so there's an immunity to change, which is a totally different set of problems to solve than overwhelm. And there's a different speed at which you have to move within each. So one of the things I'll ask you to do after you watch that video is to just do a brief assessment. And yeah, there may be parts of what you're managing and leading that live in the other categories as well, but you just named two. And what I want you to do is just assess what part of the organization or the team or the business unit lives in this category where the dominant emotion is resistance and immunity and denial, and what part of what's happening lives in overwhelm, accelerated growth. Things are just moving so fast. You will need to then, we will design together interventions to help manage those emotions in such a way that the change that needs to happen happens without so much pain. Because that's the other thing to remember about change management. Change management is merely pain management.
Yeah, and that's right.
Change of any kind, even good change, even change I choose, creates pain in us. Now, most people in the world of work, the changes are almost never their choice, which means the pain goes up and the pain tolerance goes down. And so that's the stuff. I just wanted to frame that for you. So that
that's great.
If you and I think about how we're going to work together over the next 90 days, this is where I want us to start. Because it sounds like you got a ton of fun, interesting challenges that I'd love to dig in with you.
You're completely accurate on that. You know, we're realigning and growing at the same time in an industry that is kind of interesting right now, because there's a lot of movement in the mortgage industry with higher rates and realigning of a lot of different things. At the same time, so what I've done so far is to make sure that change is not just something coming from the top. I've engaged my leadership for them to really drive the change. It's not me being the person like telling them what to do. It's really ask them to create the plan, to work in the plan, and to actually come up with what we need to do. But I think the assessment will be great for us to understand better strategy.
And I'll just caution you a little bit. I don't know anything about your leadership, and they may be really, really skilled at this. It is also possible that they are inexperienced in the body of knowledge of change management. And so you're going to get access to information and approaches that very few people have that will make a huge difference in making the change easier. So you may want to be positioning yourself as an advisor to how that change should be led. You're right. It should come from them, but how it gets led, you're going to want to be, you're going to want to have a seat at the table about how that happens.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what I'm running as a leadership team, I've taken more of an advisory role for them and have them, like, I guide them through things that, you know, when I see they going off the rails, I bring them in and kind of like keep them in the know. But I think having a better structure approach, like we are talking right now, I think it's definitely going to help me be more deliberate about the change.
Awesome. Now, do you have a team of engineers and product managers? Are you over all of engineering and product, or are you just
just product? Okay. Yeah. So the engineering side is about like 300 to 500 people.
Right.
And we are in product. We're growing. We're severely understaffed. We can keep up. So all the people that I have, a lot of the old people, they're overworked, overwhelmed because there's too much going on. They can't get their hands on it.
I get it. Yep. That's the accelerated growth part. So take a look at those things. Super.
Definitely.
Cool.
I'm
excited to meet you. Thanks for joining. We're glad to have you, and we'll look forward to working with you going forward, Diego.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm very excited too.
Cool. Okay. We have, who else do we have in here? Ben, I see you noted something in the chat. Did you want to talk through what you're learning? I assume Benedict, right? It says Ben on your thing, but Benedict. Let's see, he's muted.
Here we go. Oh, look.
You muted yourself again. If you're
can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you. Yep.
Okay. The safe driving mode took over my phone, so I can't turn on my video. So I actually pulled over and stopped. But if you'll excuse the video, I'll get to the point. Yeah. So we did have my effort here is with an airline that's going through a emphasis on safety culture. We have a rebuilding. So I've got two or three things going on at once, that being the whole 90-day thing being new and hiring in a new team for operational safety and security and compliance. But then the overall organization, each one of the divisions are like little entities. And so a unified safety culture around the proactive versus reactive effort. The focus groups that we had the safety and compliance champions, if you will. We had frontline employees, the ramp, the cockpit, the trainers, the tech ops, that sort of thing. And we also had mid-level management. So I'm glad I had your courses ahead of time, because one of the things that certainly helped me with is the levels of the hierarchy and how vision changes and purpose and values change. They've got a really good defined purpose and values, but we don't have the behaviors outlined with the to this particular discipline. So one of the things that evolved is the perceptions of it. And certainly the further you get from the top is, well, that's not what we meant. So the alignment from the leadership is the bigger issue. And then there's the smaller and more important issue of the actual empowerment of people to do it. So balancing what also has risen to the top on the front line has been empowerment against operational pressure to make a call when you need to stop the operation for various reasons. There's inherent in high performance groups, highly skilled high performance endeavors to, we know what we're doing. We've done this before. It goes off the rails a little bit, we can fix it. I've been there XYZ that relating to something in the past. So the big thing that's bubbled up is the layers of management to frontline, ensuring that those dilutions of what they perceive as empowerment and as clear values and behaviors to support those are actually received on the frontline. And then also the alignment on our teams. So the new team trying to do this change, that's been really challenging, trying to get them all on the same sheet of music. So I've had two different things going on, and it's been helpful that I've had your education to get me there. The deliverables, I'll have a big brief on May 7th that I'm getting ready for, and I'll have final reports from the various
Sorry, you just cut out again, Ben. Bennett, are you there? Can't hear you if you're there.
You might be driving, and I think it might reception might have gone off.
Yeah, that's possible. Okay. We can move on to somebody else and come back to Bennett. Yeah, it looks like he had to drop off there to restart. Who else has something they want to check in on? If not, I'm going to pick on somebody.
Hey, Shane, I guess I'll go.
Great. Hey, Clay.
Hello. One of the things that I'm dealing with currently is we actually have a cousin company almost. It's owned by my father and uncle, just like the company I work for. And we are doing a joint project almost to promote a program within that company. But the product that is going to be provided by my company, if you will, the pharmacy. And so one of the things that we've been dealing with over the last couple of weeks is just trying to navigate our leadership, you know, myself and some of my team members, and then also the vice president of business development over there, their COO, and, you know, they're needing things from me and my team. I'm needing things from them and their team, and just kind of where does everybody's priorities lie? And, you know, what type of authority do I have to ask their CEO's IT person that I need this, that, and the other, and I need it by next week, and vice versa. So that's just kind of been some tricky waters to wade through, especially because we have the owner of the company that has this vision. You know, he's got the vision of this program and how it's going to benefit both companies. And it's so easy. The vision is easy to see. Executing it is probably not going to be difficult either. But again, just learning to work together with two leadership teams and two different companies and whose authority matters more, all those dynamics have we've been trying to work through.
Yeah. So I think that the most effective tool when you're dealing with really complex processes and complex power lines that creates a lot of clarity is the RACI chart. We talked about it last week. Sarah was actually going to implement a RACI chart with her team. If you go to, I believe it's module 4, it introduces you to a RACI chart and how it functions and how to build one. And I think that to start, just get yourself familiar with the tool. And once you understand the tool, and if you think that it is a way to help process and guide that, then what we can do is strategize the best way for that tool to be implemented, because you won't have the authority to implement the tool. Most likely only the owner will, and you'll need someone to be able to facilitate that with the owner. And that could be you, maybe somebody else in the organization. But a good place to start is the RACI chart. Have you ever heard of the RACI chart? Were you on last week? I think you were.
I was last week, but I don't know. I hadn't thought of this dynamic, even though I was dealing with it at the time. I hadn't thought about it, bringing it up. That module and chart didn't stick with me.
Yeah, got it. No problem. Well, I think that's a good place to start based on what you just told me, and get familiar with it and then see if you think it If you think it works, if you think it's useful, if you're looking at it, you're going, actually, I still don't see how that's relevant, or I think I'm actually more dealing with this rather than that, then let me know and we'll strategize a better way to get you the help you need. but it sounds like you're in kind of a mid-level, whereas you're dealing with people in more power than you. Is that correct?
No, I mean, I would say we're at equal levels in our respective companies.
Okay.
So that's one of the struggles that we're having is who owns the project, who's in charge of ultimately getting this thing off the ground.
That's a racy chart. That's what racies are designed to do. They're meant to create clarity around who owns what, who's accountable for what. A more graphic term is whose throat you choke when it goes wrong, that kind of stuff. Yep. So for sure, watch that, and then we can come back to some things.
Sounds good.
Awesome. I see Megan has a question, and I do want to check in with Sarah to see how her racy conversations went. Megan.
Can you guys hear me?
I can, yeah.
Actually, just kind of piggybacking off of that, last week I kind of put some more thought in. I actually jumped to module 4 because I thought that was relevant to the issue that I was talking about with the personnel, the different managers that I have. And I think that, yes, the racy chart, and we did some restructuring a couple of years ago from a one manager solution, and we've grown. And so we did restructure, and thinking about it, it wasn't the title that the person had. It was probably that we haven't assigned what they're responsible for, what authority they have, when they need to consult, we're going to go through that exercise and see where we fall out on that. I think that's probably closer to where we need to be. On surface level, it was titles, but I think that's underlying where we need to be.
Yeah, good. the other thing that can be helpful for you is, you may have already reviewed this in module 4, but the discussion of roles, how to define roles, accountability, responsibility, making sure all of that matches and is clear, and to think in terms of job descriptions as a collection of roles rather than one monolithic thing that you just have, which allows you to be a little more dynamic.
Well, we divvied up the task list, but there's daily, weekly, monthly. So everybody had assignments, but they didn't know if they were really, they don't know if they're really in charge of it, if they can make a decision, if they have to ask for it. So I think we need to do some work there. So I jumped to module 4. I didn't do them all in order.
Got it. Now, you don't need to do them in order. That's A-okay with me. Yeah. They're built in order, but when you get to later videos, it'll reference earlier videos if you need access to that information. So feel free to jump around and use it how you see fit. When Bennett comes back, I'm going to offer something else to him. I forgot that we didn't get a chance to get to. Sarah, do you mind if I call on you and just check in, see how your experience was with the RACI, if you've done that?
No, that's fine. Thank you. And we had some initial conversations, actually. But my peer manager was stepping out on vacation last week, so she did not get a chance to complete her side of it. She has taken a look at it and is excited about the opportunity and feels like that is a good structure and a great place for us to start. So I sent her my information and she's reviewing that, but also coming at it from what would her decisions be if it was just coming from her. So
awesome.
First steps for us, but we're both excited about the opportunity and feel like that's a great place for us to start.
Good. Yeah. And that is the way to work with a RACI is you populate it and you do the 80-20 rule. You let people know it's not fully baked. You can have a conversation about power, but awesome. Okay, good. Awesome.
For me, a lot of the conversation this morning is really hitting home because I think I mentioned the last call I was on that we are merging two institutions together that are almost of equal size. And so my direct reports are all, their cheese is being moved. Mine is being moved. I have a new manager. I have an existing manager that's going to hang on for the next 6 months, even though we're merging together. So we have to learn a new manager, learn the new ways. Mm. There's a lot going on for us right now. So all of the conversation is really hitting.
A lot. Well, Sarah, just a couple of things for you as you think about merging. One is I'm aware that so much of what's about to unfold is out of your control too. So you're just kind of going along for this ride and all the decisions that are getting made that you may or may not agree with. But the you may already know to do this, but I'll just remind you if it's not top of mind. You know, the emotional system in a merger is one of great uncertainty. So there's tons of chaos. And one of the best things you can do is create predictable rituals that people can count on. And so whether that's regular, consistent, repeated recognition and protocols in meetings, whether that's whatever your structures are and containers that you have, the rituals that you created. And if you don't have any, it's good to create some now, because those rituals stabilize in chaos. And in a weird way, it's part of why religions developed as powerfully as they did in the Middle Ages, which were basically the epitome of chaos. And they just said, well, whatever the heck's going on out there with barbarians, you come in here, you kneel down, you stand up, you listen to this guy say these things, and you take this wafer, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, good. I know at least I have that every single time that I come here. And so that's just, I want you to be kind of thinking creatively about how do I create stabilizing rituals so that my team doesn't pull their hair out during this transition. So I'll just check in with you. Does that resonate with you?
It does. Like I said, I think you're spot on. Everybody's there's no consistency. There's no consistency for our particular region, nor for the entire footprint, really. There's so much growth and so much projection that we're dealing with on top of trying to merge these two entities together. So we weren't in a stable place to begin with. And now we're adding more to it. So that's a very good suggestion, and one that I've tried to be stable with. But I think at this point, it might be good to add just one more that's all about just how are you doing? What hit you this week?
So I think an effective, one of the simplest rituals you can find in module 4, which is how to have better meetings. So how you have your weekly tactical meetings with your team and how they then have their meetings with their team. If you install at the beginning of every one of those meetings a ritual, which I suggest in that module, which is a recognition ritual, it takes 2 minutes, it's short, where you're recognizing people for and celebrating them for the behaviors that express the values of the organization. Now, this may feel, it depends on what kind of organization you have, and it depends on how many tectonic plates are shifting. But if you can kind of keep linking them to something bigger than their daily tasks that are all going to be, you know, as you said, the cheese is going to move, and eventually even the values are going to move probably, but while you still have them, they're usually the last to be thought through. You can continue to kind of anchor them in stabilizing energies like values, and you use concrete tactical rituals to do that. And so module 4, how to have better meetings, watch that, look at the guidebook and cherry pick the things you think might be really useful. So you don't have to invent it. It's kind of been invented for you and it works really, really well.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. We were doing that pretty consistently and then mayhem hit and we kind of stepped away from it. So I will definitely go look at that and see if there's another nugget in there for me to use.
And if you've already got something, you just need to restart it, that's fine too. It's the thing that leaders must always forget in times of crisis. They go, crisis, everything goes out the window, let's get back. And you're like, actually, that is the time in the case of a complex organization. You know, if you're a small startup, who cares? But if you've got a big institution, that is the time it is so powerful to create stabilizing forces.
Yeah, no, that's good help. Like I said, everything I'm listening to so far today, good help.
You bet. Thanks. Awesome. Okay. Who else? Otherwise, I'm going to pick on somebody. Like I picked on Sarah. Maybe you want to get picked on. That's why you're all so silent. Jason, you're up. You got picked on. Unless Diego, did you have something? I see a camera come on.
No, I just wanted to be present. No, that's it. No,
awesome.
That's
all. Welcome. Thanks for coming back. I was feeling lonely. Jason, this is the first time in my life I've ever seen you not in fatigues.
Well, I'm actually off today. So family events, my dad had some stuff. So taking care of that. But here I am still plugged in and working away at work. Yeah, I get it. As you know, world events is kind of occupying a lot of time at the moment. But yeah. So I'm still the same place.
I was going to ask, how's that affecting you? I mean, that, I imagine that's pretty destabilizing. I don't know to what extent, but.
It can be. It depends on which path it goes and how we go. It did lead to a conversation. So I was off yesterday. Well, actually Monday, Tuesday, and today, and off. But talking with my officer in charge at the moment. So they put out a request for information to see volunteers who want to go over and help Ukraine and do whatever we want. We had an excellent turnout, as I would expect. I mean, it's a service before self, and a lot of us really hold that to heart and we're willing to help. But I also have some exercises and inspections coming up in the spring and the fall. And with the length of these potential orders, I'd ask my second in charge now, you know, I was like, well, you took all these names and that's noble, but what about our mission? So it was a good opportunity this morning to refresh what we have to do in the spring and the fall. And if we take these people out of pocket, what's our backup plan? And is it even supposed to happen? So going back to all the way just at the beginning, I've, you know, my second in charge, the one that hears, I've actually included him on a lot of these conversations in some of the meetings. And as we go back through some of the modules and whatnot, and I was like, so what is our mission? What have I charged you with? And it's to take care of home station. If you, I get it. We don't want to see people suffer, but Ukraine is not in our mission set. Yeah. And the response is, you know, well, what if this person doesn't have a job right now? And this is, you know, let's say 90 days of orders that he can go. And I'm like, you're not listening. You're not engaging in the proper path that I'm charging you to do. And that is to take care of our mission. I was like, I feel for the person that doesn't have a job and we will have a conversation, but you need to answer these questions first is how does this move our mission forward? And so it was a good lesson this morning I think many just have. It's a communication thing. It's set it up. You're absolutely right. You know, the values, we have those. I owe you the behaviors and then the rituals to reinforce the behaviors. And we have to sit down and do that. But I didn't get there. You know, the week to week, they flow way too fast. Time flee. It seems to accelerate. I don't know. When another 10 years from now, I think a year is going to be a week. I don't get it.
Yeah. But, no, you're right about that. Well, just as an aside, forgive me, but it seems shocking to me that they're asking the Pittsburgh Air National Guard to go overseas. It's just like, do we not have, and we spend like so much on our military, do we not have enough personnel to go over? It's just weird. We're not even in a war yet. That's baffling to me.
We're closer to the tip. So everyone thinks the Guard and the Reserve, but we have, so I'm a tanker unit, a KC-135 unit. We have half of those resources. So for us to be a worldwide power, it's a global mobility. And okay. So here's a story, you know, 12 F-16s from Nebraska to Florida took 16 tankings. So they had to connect with us 16 times. They can only go about a half a state before they need it. Really? So to move cargo, people, equipment, equipment, including the fighters and whatever else needs tanked. That's the reason we are number one power. We're a nuclear triad. So to get bombers across the world and everything else. So tankers are vastly important and we own half of them. We're the only super tanker wing, in the Reserve Force or Air National Guard with the quantity of jets that we have here. So we're in high demand.
I had no idea. Got it. Okay. Well, that's insane. That's pretty crazy. I didn't know any of that information. Thank you for sharing it. I know that's not related to leadership. That was to satisfy my own curiosity, but I do appreciate it.
Well, I'll turn it back at you. If I have a couple minutes, I'll yield my time to you there since we had the State of the Union, but, asking a couple of emails or whatnot, and always, no matter what question comes up, and I know you'd rather have an email to prepare and everything else, but how did you gain and retain your knowledge and continue to grow right now? And I appreciate it. I can seem scatterbrained and everything else, and you can recognize that and give a specific set to say, hey, focus here. I appreciate it. But at some point, these coaching calls would end. It's not unlimited pocket. And how to continue to grow. Obviously we have access to your modules and that's awesome. And hopefully we still have access to the coaching calls, but how do you I guess just repetition or whatnot. But I know you're the pastor from the small church to a large church, and then all of a sudden now you're on the big scene with coaching and everything else. How did you gain your knowledge, and then how do you retain it?
Yeah, great question. So as early as seventh grade, people nicknamed me Freud. I was the guy that everyone came to talk about their problems with, and I don't know how I knew the answers, but I had a pretty good idea on how to guide them. I don't know how. At a young age, I had an intuitive awareness of the hidden systems, the underlying motivations of people. So some of that I come by honestly. For sure, cut my teeth in churches, which sounds somewhat mundane, perhaps, but is in fact more emotionally complex by a factor of 1,000 than any organization I've ever helped in. And I have someone like you, and I have a guy who's deputy director of an intelligence agency who reports to the president. I've had corporate leaders, Fortune 50 companies. None of them held a candle to the emotional complexity that I had to contend with in the context of churches, both a small and a very large church. Totally different world. And as a result, I made a lot of mistakes. And even with my innate capacity, I still just kept stepping on my own toes and tripping over things. And so I had some really gifted coaches who were, I didn't even know coaching was an industry. And as I got in and learned what they taught me, and I reinvented myself as a leader in a very complex system and started seeing amazing results. When I started working with other coaches or other corporate leaders, I realized that I had skills and abilities that they didn't have. And I had access to knowledge and understanding they didn't have. So like anything, it's a tradecraft, just like you as a pilot. You know, how did you learn to be a pilot? Well, you practiced and practiced and practiced and got tested, and hopefully you didn't fail as many times as I did. And then now it's my profession. So every day I'm connecting with people thinking about what are leaders really going through, and how do I make their jobs easier? How do I simplify the stuff that I know? And I've been trained in a lot of stuff and certified, and those are fine and useful, and I really like them, but I'm not married to any model of doing this. I'm married to what's effective. Is this effective, and is it efficient? And that's the other thing I learned about working in mostly corporate world. They don't have time for a 4-day retreat where they just get to navel gaze. Some do, and I like to do that for leaders, and they're really powerful transformational things, but there are just a lot of leaders out there who don't have time for that and just need help now fast. And so that's where I love to focus. So, you know, I think the question behind your question is, well, I'm glad to talk about myself because I love the sound of my own voice. I don't think that's why you're asking. You were saying, hey, Shane, I know this is going to come to an end. How do I stay on it? A couple of ways. One of the ways is there may be a way to get you continued access at a lower rate for coaching calls. I mean, I offer that to people. Your organization may be willing to do that, may not, but we can explore that. But the other thing is you have lifetime access to all the training materials. You've got Instagram, Facebook. I'm always updating new content there. And then what I notice is if you can just focus and repeat something a few times, it's in you. It's part of your bones. And that's part of the reason why with you, I've been trying to focus on like, okay, just go here. Just get that under your belt a few times and you'll start to get the hang of it. And once you have the hang of it, you won't need me for that anymore. You'll already know that. You'll have your own expertise. So hopefully that helps. I mean, there's still ongoing support we can talk about too.
Yes, I appreciate that. If I could, and maybe I've just missed it. You know, I've been working my way through 1 and 3 and jumping around as I find things, but that jumping around led me to this thought. Is there any idea in the future for an index of your modules? You have them kind of listed out, and I know there's main headings for the modules, but then there's sub videos underneath, which you can tend to get lost. At least yeah. I do. So I'll find yeah. a module that I know I want. I want module 3. And then I know there's a video in there somewhere, but then this one caught my eye. So I'm going to watch video 2 though. I really should have been watching 6, and here it comes back, but an index all the way through. And then it did just
sort of like YouTube. You're like, you went in the rabbit hole. I get it.
But like an index, it says, you know, there's issues. So a lot of them address issues. So you can have one there with the description of those issues and then what tools, like the RACI chart that, you know, we can easily beeline to. It's like, I know there a year from now, I'm going to say, I know there is something that defines power lines and everything else, but I can't freaking remember what it was. And I go back to that index to say, oh yeah, here it is. So it'll help us utilize those tools.
I think that's an awesome project. It's an awesome project. Actually, back when I was a pastor, I had hundreds of sermons on my website. They're gone now, but I had a whole way of categorizing, indexing, book of the Bible, subject matter. You could search anything and it would call up anything that was related to that subject, that verse, that issue, whatever. So I had done it one time. It's an enormous undertaking. I love the idea, and I'll get around to it at some point. I'll hire somebody to take care of it for me.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks for what you do.
Yeah, of course. And Reese, thanks for your comments as well. I just saw those. It is indeed my calling and my purpose, and I'm glad I get to live it out with all of you. It's an honor and a pleasure. And Megan, it looks like you're heading out. Thanks for that. Okay, who else would like to go? Anybody else want to chat, ask questions, dig deeper? I see we have Harpreet and Michelle who have not said anything yet.
So Shane, fortunately, I'm not going through a crisis at work, so I'm really happy about that, right? but I think one of the struggles that I'm having, and probably I'm not the only one, it's about people who want to work remotely, right? And you've got, so we're mainly an on-site operation, which I think is helpful, because most people just know you got to come into the clinic in order to do your work. And obviously some managers, if they've got an emergency or whatever, I'm fine. They can work from home. I'm not micromanaging. But there are a few people who I think have just, you know, they weren't directly managed by me. So now they've come under me and I don't really think they should be working at home. And so I think what I'm struggling with, and I haven't made any changes because I want to make sure I present it in a way that they find value, right? Like bringing, so I want them. So the real thing is, I don't think she's got enough work to do at home. she's never even had enough work to do while she's at the clinic. So I know she doesn't. But because she was under someone else's management, they kind of just let it go and that's fine. So I want to bring her back into the clinic so that she can be more involved in the operations and then be able to help the other departments. But I know she's, you know, like even when you look at her timesheets or, you know, whatever she's working on, it's almost like just a copy and paste from week to week to week. And that's impossible. So I'm trying to think of the best way to, she's great. I mean, I don't want to lose her because she's got knowledge that I don't think the company could lose. So I've been thinking about this and I don't know how to frame this conversation.
So just so I understand, was she being managed by somebody else and now she's being moved under new management and it's you, or am I misunderstanding that?
It is under me. So her group is under me. It's almost like it's a small lab that used to be independent, got brought into our organization. They got put into a physician, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about they're not the greatest managers. Yes. So they kind of just yes. So now that physician has left, they're just restructuring and realize this should just come under me.
Okay. And how old and how experienced is this person?
She's been with the organization probably 10 years.
Okay. And so her function does require that she be on site. Is that right?
Some of it, yes. Right. Okay. So some of it is inventory of products, ensuring that, you know, it's more about collaborating with other teams. So she's collaborating from home while all the other teams are on site.
Okay. Okay. So one of the first things I would suggest, and how long has she been working for you?
For like under me?
Yeah.
Or just for the company?
Under you.
I would say it's just been since the beginning of the year. So since January.
Okay. Got it. All right. So one of the first things, just as a reminder, I think we've talked about it before, but I want to remind everybody, anytime anybody gets a new manager, they are effectively fired from one job and rehired to a job they didn't apply for. 70% of your work experience is derived from your direct boss. And so what that means is, as soon as they're hired to this new job, all of the goalposts move, the game they're playing changes, and no one notifies them. And in fact, the new boss doesn't even know that they're playing a new game, because that boss doesn't even know there was a different game, because you've always been who you are. And so they're going to show up under you and they're going to be like, okay, but I was like, I mean, we're playing football and there's a goalpost and I get that. And you're like, football, golf. Here's your club. And they're like, what do I do with the club? I don't even know what the club is for. And the ball is round and it's got to go in a hole. There's more than one hole. Like, how, what are you talking about? It's a very confusing, frustrating experience. And so that's the first thing, just to know, like, to know that going in, this is a difficult experience for that employee. And so the one thing that I would say to have that conversation is just to acknowledge that. Just say, hey, I know you've been bouncing around. I know you've had very different management experience. And I know that when you get a new manager, it's like getting a whole new job you didn't apply for. Just acknowledging their subjective experience creates greater openness on their end. They suddenly feel seen and heard. When you feel seen and heard, you're more likely to listen. When you don't feel seen and heard, you're more likely to shout and entrench and collude against. So that's the first thing, is just to open it up with, hey, recognize all these things are real. We're going to spend the next 60 days getting to know each other. And it could be that I'm playing a different game than you're used to playing. And I acknowledge that. And I won't even know that. You'll know that even better than I will. But what my interest is over the next 60 days is for you and I to keep aligning our expectations. And here's what I expect that to be like for both of us. My experience of aligning expectations is a series of conversations marked by misunderstandings. So for the next 60 days or 30 days or however long you want to give it, just say, it's okay if we misunderstand each other sometimes. We're going to be learning each other's language. When I say this word, there's a semantic range. It may not mean what you think it means. When I ask for this, my expectation may be here, is yours maybe here. It's okay. And what you're doing is you're reducing their anxiety. You're reducing the stress that they can expect that they're going to misunderstand you. But the goal is, and you ask this of them, my ask of you is that you won't give up clarifying our expectations together. And I won't either. We're going to be at this for 60 days. And if after 60 days we can't get aligned, then we'll have to have a different kind of conversation. But I really believe that we're going to have a lot of success. And that way there's a little flag in there that kind of says, okay, for a period of time, I'm treated with a lot of deference and I'm given lots of latitude. But at some point, I'm not going to have that deference and things are going to change. And so that's just that's a generic conversation template I just gave you. You can tailor that to whatever's appropriate to your context, but that's like how I would kind of generally start that. And if you have specific things that you know might be hard for them, that you need them to change, or that you've already witnessed, you just start there. You go, well, hey, in the spirit of getting our expectations aligned, let me make a few observations. You feel free to push back on me. Again, this is me playing football, you playing golf. We're going to have to learn. We are going to be playing my sport. That is what I need you to learn. But I'm going to flag a few things for you that I think are really important. And let's have a conversation about it. See where you are, see what you're thinking. I'll tell you how I see it. And then we'll start marching in that direction. How does that sound? Really good.
That sounds great. The first part of it actually sounded very familiar. So I think you've said it before.
I have said it. Yep. Yep. I say it often.
It'll sink in eventually.
Yeah. No, it's all part of it. Repetition helps. Speaking of Jason's question, repetition is a lot of it.
No, I think that's really good. I hadn't even thought. So I was really struggling with this conversation with her, and I've taken on a whole nother group of like 10 or 12 people. I think who've all been eager to meet with me. But I think I should equally have the conversation with them just to make sure that there aren't, you know, that they do, they're not just saying it just to say it, that they're really open to having hard conversations. So really, really good. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bennett, you're back. Are you able to hear me? You're muted if you are back. Give you a couple more seconds and then we'll move on. All right, Bennett, just if you can hear me, raise your hand when you're back online and I'm gonna transition back to somebody else. Anybody else wanna check in? Michelle, I notice you have been sitting quietly, which may be for good reason.
Oh no, nothing's changed. Just Groundhog Day, whatever day it is.
I get it. I'm sorry.
It just is what it is. I mean, it's getting better. It's literally baby steps, but it's
okay.
I think the company will take a huge change. We have a person leaving. Tomorrow's their last day, which has caused a lot of hostility. And it's the HR person. Yeah, I mean, even to the, you know, really talking to an individual because they started a meeting a minute early. Seriously? So I'm hopeful when this individual leaves to see how things turn around. So, because I think there was a lot of given, you know, perceived control and given control, that has this really huge negative undertow going on. And it makes everybody leery of the new people who have joined on, okay, what is their motive? So we'll see.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. Are you getting some bandwidth? Are you settling into your new home? Is everything going okay there? You're on the personal front. Are you getting some bandwidth there to work through stuff too?
I mean, yes and no. It's just stuff. So working through a few things. I needed to address some things for myself, which I've gotten in place. And then I need to focus back and getting some things, you know, family-wise in place. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'll go back to Bennett here. He raised his hand and feel free to check in later if you need anything, Michelle. Ben.
Yeah, hi, Shane. Sorry about the difficulties early. Morning here, and it was crazy here where I was. But in essence, I don't know where my call dropped, but there's been the first caller mentioned it's all about managing people, and certainly my experience has been that's for sure. The staging the ascent is kind of the springboard for much of what's happening here. I found that the layers, purpose and values, behaviors, messaging, all those things have a different meaning or a different perception at the different layers of an organization. And then the leadership around alignment has been a big effort this last week. And then, of course, some of the focus groups have helped us with output for the front line around empowerment. So those are the things that's bubbled up. I'm sure it'd be no surprise to you and your peers on this call is that alignment has bubbled up in different ways across the different layers. And then the biggest issue on the front line has been empowerment. And this is an operational type or, you know, entity. So there's operational pressure to perform on time, to do it right every time. And then, you know, I've been there, done that, high performance teams, football players, you know, pilots and, you know, military people, they want to make the mission succeed. So there's a reluctance to ever call timeouts when something's not quite as it should be regarding a safety culture and that sort of thing. So that's typical for most air carriers anyway, but it's just, it's good to see that these are things that I understand, both from your leadership training and from, you know, my operational background as far as the technical end of it, and that they'll be manageable, but we're not there yet.
All right. So that's great. Super helpful kind of update. One thing I'll just observe for you is it is now time for you to start dipping into polarity management, which is in module 5. If you haven't already done that.
I did look at that. I appreciate that. I was able to use it. I think it was last week, actually, in a conversation.
Good. So what you just described is a built-in polarity, which is, and you can use whatever words you want to use, and there are lots of different ways to describe it, but effectively, I am empowered to do what I need to do on the front line is one end of the pole, and the organization requires approvals and consistency and continuity on the other end of the pole.
Right.
Both are necessary, both are valid. When they're out of balance, you will have problems. So the more empowered everybody is, you lose all the efficiencies, you lose all best practices, you lose continuity, but you gain speed, you gain responsiveness. Right. You go over here, so you understand the way polarities work. So I think that one of the ways that you want to have a conversation and the way I want you thinking about how you're designing values and behaviors and expectations is to build in a management of the various polarities. So, you know, for example, when I'm building and designing values for an organization, and one of their values is high performance, let's say, and they're all driving to achieve the highest this and that, I will almost always encourage them to build a value, whether they have it or not, called connection, where they're basically, it's just the human side. Like, we listen to each other, we care about each other, you know, just that, that's how you create. If you just have somebody whose values are like performance, excellence, integrity, driving, everything's always one dimensional, you literally create an organization whose all their polarities are out of balance, and you're rewarded for being out of balance in those polarities. And so I also want you to be thinking in those terms as you're observing, and you're going to see in ways that no one else in your team can see, because they haven't been trained the way you've been trained with the work we're doing. And because you have now the vision of seeing not just problems, but built-in polarities that have to be managed on an infinity loop and have to be deliberately pushed out of balance at different times into different ways, you will need to start thinking in those terms. And there are going to be moments where you're going to say, okay, there is no risk-free decision. Every decision is going to come with a consequence. Which consequence can we tolerate? Which consequence can we accept? Because no polarity exists without creating an off-balance piece.
Yeah, that's helpful, because when I went through that a few weeks ago, I had a softball come at me with an interpersonal relation, so it was great. It worked perfectly. It's like, oh, it's a polarity, you know, it's not a problem. But to take it to the organizational, operational side of what you're describing, now that's a big shift for me. And I'm listening to you right now thinking, oh boy, that's going to be good, because that's exactly what it is, but I didn't apply it that way. So I'm going to go back through that section, because one side of the equation, the pendulum, whatever acronym or story you want to use, a metaphor, gone by, and this is a great tool. How about now?
Yep, you're back again.
Yeah, it's a drive-in. Yeah, it's still morning out here in the middle of the Pacific, but this is a great tool to apply operationally is what I was saying.
It's huge.
And I haven't yet.
And there is an organizational polarity management map that you can create to have conversations about polarities in operational contexts.
Do you do that in a group setting or through policy and procedure?
No, I do it in a group setting. I get people together and I first train them on here's what a polarity is, here's what a problem is. What module contains this polarity? It's module 5, Jason. And it's, I can't remember which videos now off the top of my head, but it says it very clearly, managing polarities. And there's a series of videos after it. It's probably halfway through module 5, video 7, maybe. Could be later than that. Anyway, so what you do is you would first teach people the difference between a polarity and problem. You'd say, here's what a problem is, here's how it works, here's what a polarity is, here's how it works, here are some examples of polarities. What I think we're dealing with right now is not a problem, it's a built-in polarity, and safety by nature is going to be a polarity issue. And everything you do, a great example of like polarity being out of balance would be like what happened to America after 9/11. Like the security mentality of like surveillance and invasion and all these things. What happens is when security becomes the most important thing, you create a prison of a different kind. You're now no longer free, because you've given up all of your rights for the right of security. Safety functions that way sometimes too. It can literally be, you are so overly concerned with safety all the time that you neglect the humanity of what it is to actually live out this thing that is your fundamental mission and objective. And so, you know, I can't give you the details because I'm not in the weeds where you are, but I can say, you have a built-in polarity. On one side, it's safety. On the other side, I don't know what it is. You'd have to determine what that is. You might have 9 different versions of safety that have completely different opposing poles. You know, it depends. Safety is a big basket, right? But if you untangle that and you decide there are many, many things within safety that we can privilege that side and neglect this side, and it's okay. But on this other one, if we neglect this side, we're in real trouble. So we have to moderate it slightly. So it's worth you spending a little bit of time thinking through this from that vantage point and to think strategically so that you can start to help people see and understand in new ways.
No, that's huge and helpful. It is fairly regulated, the risk tolerance in U.S. air carriers, you know, with all their FAA oversight. But within that, each air carrier is a little different with their personality, their emphasis items, and also the culture that's in there implementing it day to day. So, you know, that polarity is, I'm so glad you just went through that, because it's light bulbs are going off for me. So, it's a continuous thing. And this gives me something, a way to where I feel more empowered to control it. Before it seemed like, a bigger dragon to slay, but it's really not when you look at it through that lens. Yeah. Thank you.
No, it's not. And one of the things that'll happen in a polarity mapping exercise is you will build in to your operations a couple of things. For example, not only will you map it together, you'll be like, hey, when this polarity is working well, what do we gain? Hey, when it's not working well, what do we lose? When the other side is working well, what do we gain? What do we lose? That's easy. Everybody can do that in a heartbeat. The harder thing is when you go, well, what are the early warning signs that we're out of balance? And you're trying to focus on data. So you're like, on this polarity, we'll know we're out of balance if X, Y, and Z happen. And then on this one, it's X, Y, and Z. Great, that's awesome. But you have to go one step further, which is, who will tell us when we're out of balance? Who is empowered to alert us that the warning signs are happening? And what containers do we create so that they have a means by which to tell us? Because almost always that data will come from the front line. Sometimes it comes from the top, you know, brass, but very often it's frontline people that are experiencing in the trenches going, I'm seeing the data, the thing's not working, it's not good, whatever's happening. They need to feel empowered, they need to have a path, they need to have an accountability, and they need to have a container that they know, like, we have that monthly meeting, and in that monthly meeting, it is my responsibility to tell you that there's a warning sign going off. If you just say, hey, here's how we'll know when we've got a warning sign, no one will do it, because nobody feels accountable to do it, and nobody feels empowered to speak it.
And then ultimately, with this connecting safety culture to purpose and values discussion through this polarity effort, that would it not allow certain behaviors to fall out? So then you could identify ultimately the end goal is I don't want to, somebody on the front line, they're not a risk professional. They're doing a job, and we just want them to do it right and feel that empowerment. So we give them behaviors that model all the outcomes that of what we went through. Okay.
That's right. And you link it to values and you hope those values are well balanced, you know, I understand you've got all kinds of regulations that are not going to be moved, but you know, when you're talking about culture, you're talking about humans. Fundamentally, you're talking about humans. And so
right.
It's important that there is humanity as part of the safety conversation. And that's just the one thing I would, again, not having any idea what the details are that you're dealing with. It's just a general orientation that I want you to keep bringing to these conversations. Polarity management, rituals and behaviors, linking it to values, creating humanity and balance. I know you guys know that because you got the spirit of Aloha. And that's awesome, by the way. You can leverage that. That ensures that seeing humanity is a part of it. So the good news is I don't think you're working at cross purposes with your organization. I think you're just trying to find ways to execute that vision, which is a great place to be.
Right. That's what it feels like. I'm fortunate. A lot of great work ahead of me before I got here. And you're right with the it's about the people, because, you know, they're highly trained, high effective teams, like the professionals in aviation, at any air carrier, they're all at the same level of high performance, or they wouldn't be there at an air carrier. So it's those intricacies of the personalities and the culture and that connection that is really helping influence the culture more than a new, they're so trained and regulated. It's, you know, there's not much you do there. It's the other softer side of it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you bet. You bet. No problem. Good. Awesome. Okay, Bennett, congrats on the progress you're making. All right. I think we've been through everybody. Second round. Who wants to go again? What other things were surfaced for you in what you've been hearing in the call? What connections are you making? What questions might you have? Okay.
I think so. Shane, I was just resonating with I can't remember who was speaking, but they were just speaking about dealing with members of their cousin organization and not really sure who to go to, because we went around and talked about the RACI, but I guess I can see using a RACI with people who are in my direct, that I'm dealing with directly. So in our organization, we're really matrixed, and, I've got line of sight and responsibility and accountability for everyone that's at my site, but people sit at my site that belong to a global function. And, I just had a conversation earlier today. So I asked her for something and they were like, well, almost like questioning why I needed it, whatever. And so I think she was also unclear, like who's allowed to have what information. And the structure still, I think they haven't really come out and told everybody what the new structure is. So I think it might just be a little bit of that. But how do you navigate all this, especially in a global organization? Right, where you are responsible, like, so I'm responsible for my site, but there are people here that really I'm not.
Yeah, I understand.
They don't report into me. They don't report into me at all.
Okay, so a RACI is actually excellent for resolving those kinds of things, but it probably can't be done at your level exclusively. It would have to be someone above you that wants to take that on. However, there is a way to get that conversation going. And one of the ways is you build your own RACI with them included, and you decide what you think it should be. And then you send it, you have a conversation with your, whoever the person is that would have some authority in this, and say, hey, this is what's going on in our little neck of the woods. This is what I don't have authority over this, but I want you to know this is where I imagine them, and this is where the approvals go, and this is where responsibility would live. And you're not trying to, again, when you do a RACI, you're not trying to map everything under the sun. You're just doing the things where you sense tensions. And this is just a general orientation, right? You're all of our jobs in an organization is to sense tensions. Tension is there's a gap between the current state and what I imagine is possible. And like a rubber band, it's got potential. And so you're just trying to release the potential to create that solution. And so what you're doing is you're saying, hey, there's some key tensions in our system, the way that things are operating. To resolve those tensions, I'm proposing this particular arrangement of power and accountability. I'd like to get your approval on that and or input. And if they look at it and they go, that sounds great, except maybe not that, then suddenly you've got your answer and you go back and you begin to walk everyone through. Here's who's doing what. I've got approval from this person to do it. So that way you don't have to wait for them to go do it. You can just propose it proactively and see if they can buy into it. And if they resist it a lot, then there's a different set of conversations we can talk about. But at first, just start to see if they'd be open to your vision.
No, I think you're right. I don't think she'd be resistant at all.
Yeah. Very often when a team member brings the solution to you, it's often just like, thanks for making me not have to think about it.
Right.
I appreciate you solving that problem I didn't have to solve for you. Awesome.
Agreed.
And here's a little adjustment you may not have thought about, or here's an implication that you can't see. But other than that, let's solve it. So no, actually, I think a RACI is a great way to do that.
Okay.
Often RACIs are not very useful when there's a clear hierarchy. With a clear hierarchy, it's like the boss just tells you what's going to happen. RACIs are most powerful and useful when you have matrix organizations, peer groups that can't seem to align or agree, where it's not clear who's got who, where the buck stops. That's when RACIs are really helpful.
Okay.
Awesome. All right, friends and relatives. We have 6 more minutes. I'm happy to stick around. If anybody has any other comments or questions, let's do it. If not.
Hey, Shane.
Yes.
So here, you would think so. So, oh, it's me. Hey, sorry about that. You would think that, a defined line of hierarchy, right? But so I would think a RACI would still be effective, even though, so I'm at the top and have a whole bunch of people, at least in my organization, but I was going to use that to redefine where power is supposed to go in the organization, not define, because through attrition, right, someone's deployed, someone's gone, I sign a memo because I have the ultimate authority through an organization. Then next year when we pull up that memo, my name's on it. So then ultimately over a 5-year time span, everything becomes my responsibility and everyone just accepts it. So I was going to use a RACI as that, just to put it back in place and say, hold on. Yes, I have the ultimate authority, but you're missing out on yours. You're supposed to have done this 3 layers lower. Yes. Is it not the right tool?
It can be a right tool. It doesn't have to be. A RACI can be pretty elaborate to solve a complex problem, but it is also useful to memorialize agreements of power. And so, you know, to have that document and to have it agreed to and have that on paper somewhere will help you. And, you know, Jason, one of the projects, the tasks, the homework that I think I gave you at one point, I don't know if you've had a chance to do it, but I still think it's worth your energy, is to detail of some of the tasks that you think it might be possible to automate or delegate. You know, those are the 2 ways that you elevate, is you delegate, elevate, or you automate and elevate. And leaders who are kind of continue to get drawn back down into the weeds, it's hard work, but it's worth doing to bring yourself out of the weeds. And in order to do that well, so, you know, automate is a technology. There may be some technological solution that can automate certain tasks for you. Delegate is humans. You're identifying other people to do it. And in addition to a RACI chart that will help you memorialize the delegation, which is what you're describing. So it is very, you could absolutely use it for this purpose. In addition to that, I think you as a leader will have to get good at remembering that 90% is still an A. And when it's not mission critical tasks, when it's not, you know, keeping a plane in the air where 90% is still not an A, you got to have it right, right? But there are one of the dangers with the kind of role that you have, which is security, protection, you know, things cannot fall through the cracks ever. One of the risks is that we can tend to apply that thinking to every task in the system. And that becomes untenable, unreasonable. No one can live up to that. And so it's helpful for you to notice, like, what are those things that truly, if they got it and done it at 90%, it'd be fine. And that's still an A. And yes, if I were to do it, or if I had them do it the way I wanted them to do it, it'd be 100%. Well, guess what? It's not always going to be 100%. So if you can get good at that, that can be really helpful. And so my encouragement to you is to think really hard about some of those tasks that you don't actually have to do, even though you're better at it, even though you don't trust the person to get it done, even though you don't like how they're doing it. There may be some tasks in your life that you really could begin to release. And I would love for you to do that, because what I want you to have is more bandwidth. You serve the organization's mission better when you have greater bandwidth. This is the deal. The higher you are in the system, the more bandwidth you actually are technically supposed to have. If you don't have extra bandwidth, you're not actually serving that system. So creating margin so that you have space to think strategically is a critical part of your job description. You may not have been told that. No one may agree with me on that, but I'm telling you, in organizational dynamics, that's what's required. And so that's important. As things keep coming up to you, you can keep asking the question, is it absolutely essential that I address this? Or can somebody else do that? So I'm going to pause there and let you push back a little.
No, it's I have been. I there was nothing on paper or whatnot, but actually my officers have that also. They look at me when something's presented and they're like, can't we do that? And I'm like, absolutely, go for it.
Good.
So it is working in the organization, and we do understand that. And yes, it does put me back in the strategic mindset versus the tactical or even operational side of things. And it's needed, but it takes a while to reboot and put your mind back in that higher level, at least for me.
Yes. It is hard. It's hard for all of us. We all get drawn down. The energy always flows down. It's gravity. So it makes sense. You got to put some effort into it. And I do think some way of memorializing it is important for you. And a RACI chart is one of the ways to do that. And so, you know, it doesn't sound like you're solving complex power dynamics. You're trying to secure power dynamics, really ground them. And a RACI can do that too.
Okay. No, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Awesome. Jason, is there any risk that you would have to be involved in what's happening in the Ukraine?
If I volunteer, at this moment, you know, the way that NATO and the way that they have, they're not part of NATO, and that's part of Russia's beef, is they don't want them to be part of NATO. So as a unit, we won't be tasked as a whole, I can imagine. But then we also, so our sister state for Pennsylvania is Lithuania. So there becomes, depends on what Russia does. If it's to occupy or just take over the government, that's a different story. If they go to occupy, then maybe we would get activated because it threatens the Balkan states. So,
got it. Okay.
Who knows? I'll still jump on the calls from over there. Our internet's pretty good.
Well, yeah, no, I'm just thinking about your well-being and your family and all that fun stuff. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, please do keep me posted on how things unfold for you. We appreciate your service, and we're concerned for your safety. So, and your well-being, even if you're not in direct harm's way, you got a family and a life and all that stuff. So hopefully
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet. Okay, good. Well, everybody, unless anybody has any last questions, I'm going to thank you all and bid you adieu.
Great. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jenny.
Bye.
See you all.
All right. Bye. Bye.